The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world. With such abundance of bad news, many people are not sure it's worth staying around until the 80s. Millions today are living on the notion, I'll cry tomorrow, on the idea that a few pleasurable moments now are worth more than going without those temporary pleasures and hoping to enjoy a long and a peaceful and a happy life tomorrow. The idea seems to be I'm doomed anyhow, so I might as well enjoy dying. You know, people say I've got to have some kind of a vice. Or they say I'm not going to live in fear. And anywhere from the soldiers in Vietnam to the housewives who don't want to talk about the possibility of nuclear annihilation, people are simply saying, I'll take my chances with the rest. It's amazing how the idea that it's always the other person stands us in such good stead. You take a look at the peoples in the United States. Now, you people in Australia have the similar problems, in the Philippines, and wherever you live, and it's the same around the world. People are people, after all, in all of our colors and languages and races, but we have a unique problem in the United States. It's perhaps not quite so unique when you consider the traffic jams of Rome, Paris, and much of Europe, and especially in London. But despite the usual safety council predictions of a terrible traffic on one of our prolonged weekend holidays, you look at the millions who scramble frenziedly this way and that in their automobiles back and forth in search of that will-o'-the-wisp pleasure and fun and escape, that moment's excitement or relaxation, and almost dutifully they manage to kill, maim, and hurt one another at about the rate predicted by the National Safety Council. It's as if one of these times we would take this warning of about 500 who are going to die, and additional hundreds who are going to be maimed and butchered, tormented, their faces disfigured for the rest of their lives, all the others who will lie hurting and aching in hospitals for months to come, and as if with one will the people would simply decide, hold it. Let's just defeat the National Safety Council predictions this one holiday and let nobody go anywhere and save about 500 lives. But of course we don't do it, and I suppose that sounds laughable, and of course somewhere there'll be one fellow someplace near Podunk who would say, well now, if everybody else is going to do that, I'll be the only guy out in the woods, so I think I'll go hunting. And across town somebody else would say, well now listen, probably everybody else is going to stay at home, so I'll be the only one out there, so I'll go hunting. And then somebody else would think, well, with all these people sitting in the cities, I might as well go to the country. And so everybody would end up doing exactly what they've always done. We're living in a time of nothing but bad news. You know, there's enough bad news in the world today that you could literally listen to it 24 hours a day. You could hear bad news. You could keep on reading and listening to it 24 hours a day without ever hearing a word to cheer you up. And even in the comics in the paper, they're hardly comic anymore. The jokes are sick, and our music is becoming more and more of a brain-jangling, strident wail, a futile, hopeless sound of shrieks and screams and protests and crying. It's enough to drive your eyes right out of their sockets when you listen to some of this stuff that you hear, which goes under the title of music. And there is such abundance of bad news that people are so disgusted that the popular pastime of Britons, Australians, Americans, Canadians, all of us today, is to do nothing but sit around and carp and gripe and discuss in disgruntled, upset tones about all the evil and the stench and the rottenness and the inequities and the supposed chicanery and all the skullduggery in high places. We like to read of the most sensational murder trial or all of the senators and congressmen who go trooping up to say they're not really guilty of having received any monies from Bobby Baker. Or we like to hear about all the latest intrigues abroad, or people like to seemingly look at some of the blood-spattered full-color pictures from the battlefield in Vietnam. Now, we don't really like to. It's sort of like a lot of times you've got a cavity in your tooth and you can't keep your tongue out of it. It hurts, but you continue to kind of irritate it, and you can't seem to keep away from it. It's a funny thing in human nature. It isn't that we enjoy bad news, but it's about all we're used to. So when we hear some good news, it sounds too good to be true. And a lot of people are living in a disillusioned way. They feel defeated and futile. They feel there is no need to worry. Nothing's going to turn out all right. That the world is not going to be a better place to live tomorrow. That next year is not going to be any better than last. In spite of all of our statements of Happy New Year and all the rest, that's a hollow sort of a clanging sound, and we know it. And so people are living for the moment, taking their chances, so to speak, and seemingly not giving a hang about the world the way it is going to be tomorrow. People today don't seemingly even plan for the future. Teenagers are futile. They feel betrayed by society, by their elders, by government leaders, by government policies, by what is waiting for them. Many of them feel like they're standing in front of a giant sort of a grist mill for teenage bodies facing military conscription at an early age. And of course, others are protesting and descending into gloom and doom, prognostications of long-haired beatniks who say that everything is bad and wrong, there's no good news anywhere. And so they're burning draft cards and holding protest demonstrations and marches and sit-ins and teach-ins and what have you. It's a fantastic age. It's the most challenging age in the history of mankind. It's fraught with the most danger, but it's also filled with the most opportunity. We have now, looming over the horizon, the capacity to either feed, house, clothe, educate the entirety of the world, and to make this world a much better place in which to live, or to blast human life off the face of the earth. Now, when we look at it humanly, we try to assess conditions and trends just where we stand. It's no wonder people are defeated, and they feel futile, because they don't see very much progress anywhere. The food gap has widened in India between the starving millions of people there, and there are going to be millions starving, and the attempts of the United States through depletion of its own fantastic reserves to try to stave off impending starvation in India, and instead of staving it off, we've just gradually sort of, like on a treadmill, fought a 5 or 6 year losing battle to where now, even with that fantastic expenditure, the food gap has widened. So increasingly people are saying, oh, who cares, and sitting back and taking their chances. You can take smoking, for instance. That's sort of indicative of the attitude of people today. You hear all kinds of things about smoking and against smoking, and now they're even having the label on the packages, and the cigarette commercials are, of course, vastly different than they were when I was a teenager. Then they used to have all kinds of zones, and some of them even had a name that sounded kind of like it was healthy. And people used to say that it would really do you a lot of good, but now they cannot say that at all. And of course, they've been reduced to music, or to the thundering surf, or to rosebuds or peach blossoms in the spring. I never could figure out what on earth a song had to do with making a car a better automobile. Or what on earth two people sitting on a rock with a wave splashing at their feet had to do with making a cigarette better. But that's the environment in which they like to put it. Now, cigarette smoking, we know, is directly related to cancer, but it's way, like way back in 1954 when I first wrote an article in the Plain Truth magazine about smoking, when the first cancer scare came out. There was a leading doctor who was instrumental in this report from the American Cancer Society, and he was asked if he smoked after he'd been interviewed by staff members of the U.S. News and World Report. And he replied, oh, sure, I smoke, but when he was asked what he was going to do about it in the light of all these reports, he said, well, he was switching to a pipe. Now, facts and warnings and statistical evidence, the thing I'm trying to point out, seems to scare nobody. All they do is seemingly shrug their shoulders and go on and change absolutely nothing. They're going to do it anyhow, whether it's the National Safety Council, whether it's progress in the world among and between nations, whether it's proliferation of nuclear bombs, whether it's the members joining the Atomic Club and more nations getting nuclear weapons. Regardless as to what it is, it seems people just can't get excited about it. They can't get hysterical enough about conditions to want to take them into their own two hands and to change them. For a while, there was a little bit of a slump in cigarette smoking, and then it went zooming back up again. And at that time, there were, what, 7 or 8 or 9 brands on the market when I wrote that article, and I said at the time the original
American Cancer Society predictions and their findings, which, of course, were poo-pooed by the big tobacco industries. But naturally, let's be objective. Of course, they're not going to say, oh, that's right, and we're sorry, and we're going to go out of business, and you shouldn't smoke. So there was a little bit of a slump, then it came back bigger and bigger than ever. And, of course, the population increases helped. But then came out all the long, surefire, double-ended cheroots that wouldn't slip in the ashtray with a non-skid grip and like as not a filter at each end. And all these various things that came along in cigarettes to make them better. And, of course, there are so many brands now you can't even begin to keep track of them all, but people are smoking as if never before. Now, in the meantime, one of the greatest health destroyers of the century has been named, and that's the cigarette. And cigarette smoking has caused a 400% increase in deaths from chronic bronchitis and emphysema in the past 10 years, and a 900% increase in the past 20 years. This was a recent public health service release in the United States. And their National Center for Chronic Disease Control said in a report that there were 3,146 women and 17,062 men who died from the two respiratory diseases in 1964, and that emphysema had become second only to heart disease as a cause of disability. Social Security payments of more than $80 million every year were made to victims of the diseases. And it showed how when cigarette smoke is inhaled, 80 to 90% of the smoke remains in the body, and a residue of tar builds up in the air tubes, and this residue of tar penetrates deeply, causes irritation and increased mucus production, and so on. Now, along with that report was how cigarette smoking hits record level. Now, here's an amazing statement. Nearly half of all Americans suffer from a chronic disease. This was from a Senate report disclosed recently. And it said the estimated cost of the economy was $57.8 billion a year. That report was made public recently about a study of the health of the elderly. And it was found that at least 87 and 3/10 million persons suffer from at least one chronic condition. 7 out of 10 people over 45 are afflicted with one or another chronic disabilities. 7 out of 10 over 45. This is the national health picture in the healthiest nation on earth. And it said that 70% of deaths are due to three chronic illnesses: heart disease, cancer, and stroke. There are 14 million and more than 14.5 million people who have heart disease, and suspected in another 13 million. About 13 million people in the United States alone suffer from some form of arthritis. There are 2 million known diabetics, and more than 500,000 new cancer cases are diagnosed every year. That's a pretty good-sized harvest somebody's making. And if you knew the truth about this statement, I'm going to say very candidly that there is a far bigger harvest of cancer victims every year than there are for the kingdom of God. You know, there was a fantastic cost that was piled up as a result of this, and it was figured out to be $57.8 billion based on the conclusions of the Social Security Administration, which totaled medical care, loss of income, loss of taxes, the loss of productive years through wasted manpower as a result of death at an early age, and so on. Yet how many people are changing their habits? Well, let me show you how many people are changing their habits as a result of these fantastic reports. Well, they're not only changing them, but they're changing them for the worse instead of better. As a matter of fact, it was reported recently that American smokers consumed a record 542 billion cigarettes in 1966 and will probably smoke even more next year despite repeated warnings of the dangers it means to health. So the point I'm making in this program stands proved, that the bigger the sound of danger, the closer we are to disaster, the more people tend to disbelieve it. And as it says in a prophecy somewhere, the people rose up to eat and to drink and to play. That's exactly where we are in world affairs today. We stand, on the one hand, on the threshold of some of the greatest breakthroughs and discoveries that could ever have been made in the time of human experience. We stand, on the other hand, trembling on the brink of nuclear cosmicide, the destruction of all of human lives. But in our private lives, in our private habits, in our private little vices, in the indulgences we allow ourselves, the average person is not willing to change. Rather, he wants to pursue his own selfish, personal, gluttonous pleasures, regardless as to what the cost may be. The Agriculture Department said recently that 1966 consumption was an increase of about 2.5% over the smoking in America in 1965. Now, recently, a top advisory in the National Advisory Cancer Council said that an enormous man-made epidemic of lung cancer has hit the country as a result of cigarette smoking. And it advised that we take more active steps. Well, I'm not a member of the National Cancer Society or some other society or medical society or anything else. But I know what I see in the statistics, and I know that I quit smoking a long time ago. I know quite a few people who did. I did for other reasons. This was before the cancer scare, but I'm certainly thankful I did. Now, you know, 50 years ago, lung cancer was so rare that it was virtually undiagnosed in one sense. You hardly ever even heard of it. But now it's expected to cause, listen to this, 50,000 agonized deaths this year. Happy New Year, everybody! You know, it's a hollow clang when you think about all of the ills and the aches and the pains, the disease and the degeneration of mankind. And then at the same time, you see us partying as ever, smoking as ever and as never before, indulging ourselves as never before, and not asking ourselves, what is life all about? Why are we alive? Where are we going? What is the future course of our peoples? What is going to happen to us in 5 years, in 10? Now we're polluting ourselves off the earth. We're polluting our air enough without people polluting their very lungs by smoking, but it's been cited now as probably one of the greatest health hazards of the 20th century. And the risk of death from all causes is 70% higher for cigarette smokers than for non-smokers. That includes everything. Chronic bronchitis, emphysema. It includes lung cancer, other forms of cancer. It includes heart disease, stroke. It includes every cause. If you're a smoker, the chances are 70% higher you're going to get hit by one of these unbelievable health hazards than the person next to you who doesn't smoke. Now, I've got nothing to sell, and I'm not remotely interested, so far as that's concerned, in some kind of a personal campaign against smoking. This is only one more point to illustrate that people today are living in the face of danger nationally, internationally, and personally, even regarding their own health and the imminent danger of destruction in an automobile accident, and they seemingly couldn't care less. And that is symptomatic of a far deeper sickness than about 500,000 cases of lung cancer. That is symptomatic of a sickness of human nature and of mankind itself. Now, before I leave the subject of smoking, if you want an article on the subject, write for it. Just looking philosophically into the question as to whether you ought to smoke. All it does is ask you why you do it. And, of course, you don't have to write for it. You don't have to answer it. If you want to smoke yourself to death, you can certainly have at it, because nobody's going to find out and do anything about it. It's not against the law yet. And people say, well, I'll just hang on to my vices. Well, that's fine. It's your lungs, you know. It's your body, your mind, your life. And that's the way people reason. Well, it's my life, and I'm going to live it. That's right. A lot of people are going to live it. They're going to die it. Nobody's going to keep them from doing it. But at the time, just before the doctor says, I'm sorry, there's nothing more that I can do for you, and you're lying there with fluid filling your lung, I have a strong feeling, based upon experience, frankly, and from what I've heard in people with whom I have visited in hospitals, that at that time in their lives, they get a sort of a strange change of attitude. And they look at it completely differently than they did in the comfort of their living room, or clinking the cocktail glasses at New Year's, or lighting up that other cigarette in the middle of a football game. They just begin to look at it differently, lying there with the knives and needles and glittering gadgets around them, than they did as they tapped expertly the cigarette on one manicured thumbnail before they placed it in the corner of their mouth. So, at least it might be interesting if you wanted to read it. This article about should you smoke, and should Christians smoke, and for that matter, should anybody. Now, as I've said, there's enough bad news in the world today that most people are not sure it's worth staying around until the 80s anyway, and so a lot of people seemingly want to do away with themselves. They just don't care to change their habits. So it's about time you began to hear some good news. But it's about time, too, that when people hear good news and they hear that there is good news ahead, that they themselves are able to do something about it, that they're able to change. You can change. You can change in any number of directions to have a happier life, have better health. And this is not some pull yourself up by your bootstraps broadcast that's trying to get you to sign up for some Smokers Anonymous or something or other. It has nothing to do with that. But in a series of programs in which I have been mapping out this master plan for world peace, and it's not my idea, but something that has been gathering dust along your library shelves in the big institutions, in private homes, in upper drawers of motels and hotels for years, it's about time we looked at it, because here is good news that was brought to this earth over 1,900 years ago, but rejected of men, absolutely ignored of men, spurned and ridiculed by most men, and of course perverted, twisted, and distorted by others. Very few people seem to realize the Bible talks about world news, world conditions, that Jesus Christ of Nazareth was a prophet, that one-third of the Bible is prophecy, and that most of it deals with our day. I was talking in the last program about the pivotal prophecy of all of the Bible, Matthew 24. And how Christ said that right at the same time you would be hearing of wars and rumors of wars, there would be famines, and this is a great era now of famine into which we enter, and pestilences, and that means merely disease epidemics. So right on the heels of this, I'm handed this special report from our news bureau that shows these fantastic numbers of chronic disease sufferers in the United States, the so-called healthiest nation on the face of the earth. And when you get the statistics about the number of people who are dying from this and that, it stands your hair on end. And in spite of this tremendous loss through death, we are still, nevertheless, in the midst of a fantastic population explosion. He said earthquakes in diverse places, and earthquakes are happening with increasing regularity. And they're getting bigger. And they're occurring in places hitherto thought safe from earthquakes. And you ought to look into that. We have a booklet on that subject, on earthquakes. Where might they strike next? And how long is it between each major earthquake? What have scientists discovered about these fantastic cracks in the earth, the slippages and fault lines, running in a complex series of great gaps all around this world, clear underneath the seas, believe it or not. It's all mapped out in this booklet. Shows you what they discovered in the geophysical year and what scientists predict and what the Bible says about future earthquakes. Here's Christ talking about a time. Now look at this and let's see if it's accurate. I know a lot of people scoff at the Bible. But let's just find out for a moment whether or not Jesus Christ just accidentally was able to put our age together or whether it's a pretty accurate prediction. He said at the precise moment when it was possible to annihilate humankind, this is down in verse 21 and 2, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. So he said that as a signal, as a sign, going along at the same time human annihilation would be possible, we would be living in a time of one great religious confusion. All kinds of voices of religion saying Christ is Christ, saying this and that and the other thing, but that many would be deceived. He said, number two, wars and rumors of wars. Now, we've had more than 40 since World War II. There's a real big hot one going on right now and more in the offing. Other more, perhaps ignored and little understood wars, but they're going on too, like Yemen and Aden and so on, and many others that are in immediate portent. Then he said famines, and there have been and will be and are being famines on the earth. Starvation in Central and South America, in many parts of Africa. Got a letter the other day from a person in Nigeria talking about truckloads of men, women, and children being herded off here and there, and many of them being butchered and slaughtered. A person over there who takes the Plain Truth magazine who writes to us. And, of course, then you hear about what's happening in India and in China, and about crop loss in the United States, about the virtual dust bowl of Australia. Now, Christ said there would not only be famines, but fantastic disease epidemics. And now we're seeing something new, man-made epidemics. How we ourselves pollute our environment, our food, our water, and our air, and how we, through smoking and other habits, are polluting our very bodies and our lungs and creating, believe it or not, man-made epidemics. Not my words. The nation's top advisory panel on cancer said that. I didn't. Get mad at them. I'm not the fellow who tells you don't smoke. The Cancer Society said that if you do, your chances of risking death from any cause whatsoever are 70% higher if you smoke than if you don't. So get mad at them, not at me. That's what they said. I, for one, believe them. I think they've got enough cases of grisly deaths on their hands that they know what they're talking about. And the only way I would smoke is somebody kills me first or ties me down and blows it in my face. And, of course, you have to put up with that sometimes anyhow at sports events and on airplanes and the like. And people are afraid to speak out about it, too. Furthermore, you know, somebody's blowing smoke in your face and you're about to gag. Most people don't look over there and say, would you please put that stinking thing away so I can breathe a while, or I'll trade you. I'll breathe for 30 minutes and then you breathe for 30 minutes. I'll breathe clean air and then you inhale that garbage. Well, you wouldn't dare do it because you're afraid you'll hurt his feelings. Of course, he's not a bit afraid he'll hurt your feelings if you're a non-smoker, but that's the way it works. We always seem to tend to give the fellow who's indulging his lustful, gluttonous desires the benefit of the doubt. Aren't we thankful he doesn't enjoy him kicking as well as he does smoking a cigarette? It might be a little tougher to put up with that. But you know, everything that Jesus Christ of Nazareth said would be an indication of the imminency of the beginning of a world-ruling government is occurring right now today. Matthew 24, the focal point, the very pivotal prophecy of the Bible, is coming to pass. Now, somewhere, somehow, Jesus Christ said that at this precise moment, while all these other things are going on, there would be the gospel, which is the good news of the coming government of God, preached to all the world as a witness. That's in verse 14 of that same chapter. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. That this message, not to establish a new movement, not to ask people to vote it in, not to begin some conflicting religious organization, but as a witness, as a warning, take it or leave it. Do what you want to with it, it's going to happen anyhow. Whether or not you realize it, you have come in contact with that very witness. And you need to know more about it. Write for this booklet, which expresses, as no other piece of literature I could give you does, the very purpose and meaning of this program, the very purpose for being of this broadcast, what it stands for, the entire message it's got to put across in a nutshell, in one booklet, entitled The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. And believe me, it's the best news you could ever read. In it is a could-be newspaper that tells you how total disarmament, it's sort of walks out into the future and tells you, as if you're already living in that time, what kind of world it will be. Headlines like, total disarmament achieved, looking at it as if it has already occurred, and a glimpse into the way this world will be. Not just the way it can be, but the way it will be. It's entitled, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. It's by the title of this radio program. It's free, as is the current number of the Plain Truth magazine, with its lead article, 1966, The Year of Violence. The article on the fable of the first fatal flight. Millions of years ago, according to evolution, our fine feathered friends, the birds, reared ugly, slimy heads from fetid seas and slithered ashore. And the closest living relatives of birds are reptiles, so they say. Can they prove it? This article says no and shows you how. Inside Communist Romania, another article, one on where is Germany headed now? An article from On the Spot with De Gaulle in the South Pacific. It's free of charge, the Plain Truth magazine. The booklet on The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What Will It Be Like? The article on smoking and the booklet on earthquakes. It's free of charge, no price, if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Send your letter to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. And so until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.